It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying, there is no running, there is no hiding, there's only fighting or dying. It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying, there is no running, there is no hiding, there's only fighting or dying.
It's Going Down is a digital community center from anarchist, anti-fascist, autonomous, anti-capitalist, and anti-colonial movements. Our mission is to provide an autonomous and resilient platform to publicize and promote revolutionary theory and action.
Go to itsgoingdown.org for daily updates. Check out our online store for ways to donate and rate and follow us on iTunes if you like this podcast. All right, thank you for tuning into the It's Going Down podcast. Do you want to introduce yourself real quick and tell us what group you're with?
Sure. My name is Foz, and I am with the Puget Sound John Brown Gun Club, which is affiliated with the National Redneck Revolt Network.
And just real quick, I mean, how did the chapter form? Was this did you all form like right after Trump came into office? Did it go back farther? And I'm just kind of curious what the cast of characters that are involved in the group, what led them to join the organization?
Yeah, so our chapter formed a bit over a year ago. I've been involved in our chapter since September of last year. And I think our members joined for a variety of different reasons. Personally, I started looking to join the Redneck Revolt Network and found my local chapter, John Brown Gun Club. Once Trump came into office is when it became much more appealing, but after Charlottesville is when I really started looking a lot more at it. Mm. But other members joined for a variety of different reasons, but I think the one thing that unifies us all is that we believe in community defense. Mm-hmm. And making sure that we can provide the resources necessary to members of our community that are marginalized and vulnerable so they can defend themselves and their own communities.
Mm-hmm. So towards that end, what type of activities does the group engage in, or what type of organizing are you doing?
So most recently, we were involved in a speaking panel that had different people that from a variety of backgrounds that were involved in anti-fascism to some extent or another, ranging from liberals from the Southern Poverty Law Center.
Wow.
Yeah.
How did this happen?
Well, we were actually invited to it. There was a speaking panel that was put together by The Stranger, which is a local Seattle paper.
Right.
That wanted to get that they have a monthly thing where they have people from different groups speak on an issue, and they have a panel. There was someone who had done who actually infiltrated a right wing gathering of neo-fascists in Seattle. Yeah. There was someone who contributed to the SPLC. There was a professor that studied the Weimar Republic and its rise and fall, and there was us. And so you had all those different variety of opinions kind of on that panel.
Interesting.
Yeah. Other things that we engage in is we do firearms familiarity training for members of the community. We do open carry actions and engage with the right there. We recently established a concealed carry license scholarship fund. Mm-hmm. For people from marginalized communities that was attached to a trans prisoner solidarity action that we did. Mm. And we really try to kind of engage in the community in different ways. I mean, again, the two large cruxes of what we do is engaging community defense and counter recruitment.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk explicitly about both of those things. But just to unpack some of the things you talked about for those that are listening that may not live in a state with open carry laws and all that stuff, what is open carrying? And also, when you talk about concealed weapons permits, what does that mean?
So open carrying means, walking out in public, with weapons. Mm-hmm. And in California, I mean, back when the Black Panthers were really active in the late 60s and early 70s, the Mulford Act was passed. So in contrast to that, in Washington, we never had legislators that really shut down the ability for people to open carry. So a concealed weapons permit is someone would apply with whatever agency they're in, like the sheriff or the police department, to have the right to go ahead and concealed carry a pistol. Mm-hmm. Open carrying is when you're actively walking around with a weapon visibly shown. Concealed carry means that you could carry inside your waistband, appendix, your ankle, where someone would not necessarily see it. And a lot of people, including myself, choose to get concealed carry licenses so that that way we can defend ourselves in the event that we're attacked.
And is it in the state you're at, is it that you have to produce like police reports showing that you're under threat and the police cannot? I know in some states that's the law, that you have to basically show the police have been called and they cannot protect you.
In Washington, it's an issue at will state, meaning that you have to pass a basic background check. But once you pass a basic background check that demonstrates that you don't have any felony convictions on your record or any history of domestic violence, you will be issued a concealed carry license.
Yeah, and we can best believe that a lot of people on the far right have them, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So let's just get into that. I mean, there was – the way that we all started talking was that there was recently a demonstration with Patriot Prayer on this program. We've talked about the most recent Patriot Prayer demonstration a couple times, but we're thinking of one about a month ago. It was like a open carry thing. Patriot Prayer was there. And can you just describe why did you all go out? I mean, you open carried at that event, so I think maybe some people might be wondering, were you there to support the Second Amendment demonstration? Were you there to oppose Patriot Prayer? What all was going on?
So one of the things that Patriot Prayer tends to attract to all of their events is a known white supremacist element. Mm-hmm. There are white nationalists that are actively engaging with their organization. Members of Identity Europa have shown up at their events. People that are with the Cascade Legion, which is a local Northwest fascist organization, have shown up at their events. And our presence there was not to, you know, support them or, you know, participate in their Second Amendment rally. Our presence there was to really demonstrate that there is an armed left that is willing to defend marginalized communities from racist and transphobic and homophobic violence. There was another Second Amendment event that we did back in April that Patriot Prayer showed up to, but wasn't organized by them, mm-hmm. where we did show up to pass out lots of literature. And we probably passed out maybe 400 or 500 pieces of anti-racist literature documenting the racist history of gun control. And we actually had a lot of really positive conversations from a group that a lot of people would assume are very right wing.
This is the one where you all took a knee during the national anthem in the pictures.
Yes, yes, that's yes. Awesome.
What did people say when you did that?
You know, interestingly enough, people didn't say anything. You know, like one of our members said, you know what, when they do the anthem, we should take a knee. And all of us looked at each other and said, holy shit, that's a brilliant idea. We should definitely do that.
Right.
You know, like once they started the national anthem, you know, we all took a knee and, you know, after it was done, we stood up and we were looking around. At that moment, I was wondering, is something going to happen? Uh-huh. But when you're, you know, sporting an AR-15 or an AK-47, I mean, people tend to be a lot more polite to you.
Yeah. And you all were there, you know, armed, you know, with weapons, with guns.
Yes. And what's interesting is that we actually seem to be more organized and more armed than some of the right-wing groups that were there.
Well, let's talk about some of those experiences going back to the other rally you were mentioning, you know, passing out flyers. And I mean, we've talked about the Mumford Act and the, you know, the racist history of gun control in this program before, but I'm just curious the response you got. I'm sure some of these people that were out there probably have heard of Redneck Revolt before. Maybe they saw it on InfoWars or some other website, but you know, what were those interactions like? Did people kind of know what the group was already, or were they like, oh, it's Antifa, or, you know, what did they say?
Some people, like, responded really positively and said, like, yes, I've been saying this for a long, long time. There were some people that were definitely our allies. There was one older gentleman who was holding a sign that says, I love my AR-15 and my trans son.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah. And there were definitely like people of color that were there that were open carrying as well. Not to assume that they're going to be on the left, but people were really friendly towards us. There was also a local militia group that was there, and we had fantastic conversations with them. They had reached out to us previously, and we had been trying to set some time up to talk, and we had some really, really engaging dialogue and some meaningful sharing with them about where we're coming from and where they're coming from.
Why is it important that Redneck Revolt, I mean, I've heard people describe it as a critical dialogue, so hopefully they don't kill us at some point, I think is the best way to describe it. But, I mean, why is it important that that people talk across those lines?
In my mind, the most important reason to have that dialogue is because, it's the primary part of the counter recruitment that we do, which is that we try to really, not necessarily flip these people into being either Marxist or leftist or anarchists necessarily, but really the purpose of counter recruitment is to get them to move away from openly fascist groups and people that have fascist ideals. Mm-hmm. For example, like the 3% originals denounced militias working to defend fascists after Charlottesville. Mm-hmm. That wasn't necessarily because of direct conversations they had with us, but it's still a big step in the right direction. The fact that after they see, people that are openly fascists mow down a group of protesters, realize that, you know what, maybe we shouldn't be defending the free speech of Nazis. Maybe we should do something else with our time. That is not a good use of their time. I mean, mind you, some of these groups still defend different Confederate heritage sites, and that's really shitty. But if they're not willing to defend fascists, I see that as a step in the right direction. I see that as a win. Yeah.
Totally.
A better example of direct intervention that another chapter of ours has done was with the American Pit Vipers, where because of building long-term relationships, the American Pit Vipers started working with Black Lives Matter out east, mm-hmm. which is a great victory in our minds. And
can you just describe a little bit about what did that look like?
Dwayne Dixon, who I think you've had on the program, could better actually describe that because he had been working more on the ground with them. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it really goes to show that having those relationships does mean something and does move things in the right direction. Mm-hmm. Locally, we actually have had some conversations about helping some militia groups learn how to identify fascists that are trying to get recruited into their organizations. So if we're actually stopping fascists by working with these different militia groups from actually joining their organizations, I would call that a win. Mm-hmm. Because anytime a fascist has less training and less guns, I'm going to see that as a victory.
What would you say to people that would say, well, that's great, the fascist haircuts are out, but what about, the 3%ers who are just kind of on the borderline of we just hate all the Muslims and the immigrants and all the Antifas and all that. That they're not, ideologically fascist. They're, quasi-constitutional libertarian. But, I mean, they're very far right, and they have, they're reactionary. And, they obviously mm-hmm. look at certain communities of people as the enemy.
Yeah, definitely. And I would say, where we try to actually have a dialogue with them on and find some common ground is how we kind of – are able to insert ourselves to maybe get them to start questioning some of the assumptions that they've made. Mm-hmm. So, for example, a lot of leftists strongly believe in individual liberty as well as collective liberty, mm-hmm. and that you can't have one really without the other. A lot of these right-wing libertarians have a strong idea of individual liberty, and that's at least some place where we can have a conversation about. Mm-hmm. And because if there's a mutual at least distrust of the government, there's at least a place to start having a dialogue. And even if they have things that we disagree with them on, a lot of different places, as long as we can have a conversation with them, we can move them in my mind. Mm-hmm. And again, the fact that we're having conversations with different militia groups about helping them identify fascists and how to stop them from being recruited into their organizations, again, is at least moving things towards a better direction, getting into not view leftists and marginalized communities as their enemies is a victory. I mean, for example, like one of our members is an Arab immigrant, mm-hmm. and watching him actually have a conversation, a dialogue with someone from a militia, I mean, who might have been, you know, anti-Muslim from the get-go, mm-hmm. would actually be a victory, because if he's at least talking to him because they have some common ground, there's something to work with there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think one thing that's important to note is that these is that the militia movement is not a monolith at all. It's very diverse, and there's a lot of distinction between the different organizations and where they're coming from and what they see their goals are.
You just want to flesh that out a little bit. I mean, we've talked a little bit about that in the past with Spencer Sunshine, but how do you see the factions kind of representing different sides?
Well, not to delve too deeply into it, but I mean, I guess one way I could compare it to is like going to an anarchist book fair. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you go to an anarchist book fair, you can see ideologies all across the anarchist spectrum, from, you know, green anarchist to red anarchist to queer anarchist, and like a whole different bunch of ideas, mm-hmm. In different organizations. And the same thing is true of the militia movement, in the sense that there is a diversity of views and opinions within there. And I think the core thing that they really, really share is a commitment to individual liberty, and they frame it around the idea of the Constitution. Mm-hmm. And that's their framing.
Mm-hmm. Well, just to go back to the original demonstration we were talking about, I don't want to spend too much more tangent time on this, but any other interactions that you had, or when you were passing out the flyers, any other stories or feedback that you got? I find that really interesting.
Are you referring to the April rally or the one with Joe?
The one where people took a knee.
And his carrier. Well, we actually took a knee at the other one too.
Oh, okay.
Maybe the first, kind of
the first knee. The first knee.
I actually had a chance to have a conversation with someone from one of those like 3% militias. Mm-hmm. And it was really engaging to actually be able to talk to him, because, I mean, I asked him, like, so what's your story? Like, what's your history? And the first thing he delved into was how hard it was for him to get medical attention from the VA, how he had been waiting for a dental appointment for 3 months. Mm-hmm. And I think that, like, being able to have that type of conversation with common ground is meaningful. I mean, other conversations that were really positive was just, I mean, really trying to humanize the, like, people, and really trying to understand that everyone has some common ground that they can work with people on, for the most part. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not talking about people like Joey Gibson and Patriot Pear and the Proud Boys and, you know, Cascade Legion and, like, Adamoff. And I mean, like, really, like, fuck them.
Right.
But I'm talking about, like, average people that just like their guns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, there is a space to have a conversation there.
Exactly. Well, let's move on to, you know, the other demonstration, the one that was organized by Patriot Prayer. I mean, I think one of the funniest things I've ever heard was that when Gibson said, he referring to the John Brown Gun Club, calling you Antifa with brains. I'm just curious, what do you think he meant by this, and how did you all take that?
It was kind of weird when he actually commented on that, because, I mean, it was the second time that we had shown up to an event that he was at. He was at the other Second Amendment rally that we attended a month before that. But I mean, I guess he meant that, like, because we're anti-fascist that happen to like guns. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, his whole shtick at that rally was all about, like, the Second Amendment, Second Amendment, Second Amendment. And I think that's kind of what his angle was. I mean, but honestly, I mean, I don't really care what he thinks of us, and I don't really want his compliments.
Yeah.
But it was definitely interesting to watch his crowd's face kind of change and their reaction change when they saw over a dozen, you know, armed leftists walk up with a banner that said "Arm yourself against white supremacy." Though,
How was that demonstration? What was the response like from the people there?
So that demonstration was a lot less engaging. We did distribute other pieces of lit there that really was kind of on the message about the history of racist violence and how Patriot Prayer tends to attract known white supremacists to their organizations. You know, the murders that happened a year ago. Mm-hmm. in Portland on the mass transit system there. And I think that at that rally, he drew more of his hardcore followers and it had less of a space for dialogue. I'll say that at the first rally that we went to where we took a knee, mm-hmm. we weren't wearing body armor. We were just wearing our branded hoodies and, you know, open carrying and really having pleasant conversations with people. At the second event, I mean, we were marching in formation, much more disciplined, and most of us were wearing body armor. Mm-hmm.
How do you feel like when you say things to people that are at his rallies, like, you know, Joey, you know, creates a big tent for white nationalists and the alt-right? How do they respond to that?
I think that it's important for at least that conversation to happen. I think at the last rally where he had, like, that we attended, where we actually went with body armor, I mean, I think that there was less of a space to have that dialogue, unfortunately. But he actually didn't have any, at least branded 3% militia people show up. Mm-hmm. It was mostly Proud Boys. Mm-hmm. And kind of like a few randoms. I mean, honestly, like, I would say if we weren't there, like, the rally would have had about, 25 to 30 people at its height. I mean, we actually, like, our presence there was almost one third to one quarter of the rally. I mean, he did not organize a big rally. It was.
Yeah. Do you feel like Gibson Starr is kind of fading? This seems to be the consensus among other anti-fascist organizers up in that area that we've talked to.
I think it is. I think that he, again, decided to run for Senate in Washington to go ahead and attract more attention. I think that he keeps having events like, you know, having these rallies at different Planned Parenthoods as a means to attract attention to himself. But the fact is, I mean, he's getting less and less people everywhere he goes, mm-hmm. which I think is a positive sign. It is a sign that says that anti-fascism in general is winning.
Mm-hmm. Well, just to kind of step away from Patriot Prayer, but to kind of step back and look at the wider picture of Patriot militia groups in the Pacific Northwest, what drives people to be part of these movements, if you can make, you know, kind of general conclusions at all?
Mm-hmm. I think that there is a general mistrust of the government at its core there. And those movements tend to really draw a lot of white working class and middle class people to them, who I feel that really believe that they've been left behind, mm-hmm. and really kind of forgotten, which, I mean, is unfortunate because, I mean, the fact of the matter is they're still doing better than a lot of other people in the country. But I think that there's a alienation and disenfranchisement that they're experiencing, and these movements are a place for them to feel safe and a place for them to actually recoup some of their identity.
Do you feel that, have you seen that kind of constituency change since Trump has come into office, or is it like have people like distance themselves a little bit from Trump, or is he kind of like gone out of favor, or is it still just, you know, gung-ho Trump?
I actually really haven't engaged with 3%ers a lot on the issue of Trump, and for me that's actually really intentional. Mm-hmm. Because I don't want it to be seen as a dividing wedge and something where it would become an obstacle to have a dialogue. I think that a lot of them are still very much very pro-Trump. But I, when I'm talking to them, I really do try to avoid those types of issues and electoral politics as much as I can. I really try to focus on bread and butter issues.
Right.
And finding common ground. Mm-hmm. Again, I mean, having conversations about people's struggles with health insurance or employment or getting any basic needs met really goes a lot farther when you're trying to find common ground and identity and shared values and shared issues than talking about electoral politics.
Right, right. I was just curious if there was a sizable kind of shift with people being like, well, maybe he's not so cool. What is your take on the open carry rallies and the different pro-Second Amendment protests that took place after the Parkland shooting? There was obviously all the walkouts that happened, and there was kind of a reaction to that. I'm just kind of curious. Obviously, we've been discussing, you know, you all going out to one of those demonstrations, but I'm just curious, you know, stepping back and looking at them as a whole, just your thoughts.
Well, you know, I mean, obviously, what happened in Parkland was awful. Mm-hmm. Though I question the motivation of some of the people that want to have the open carry rallies if they're trying to be antagonistic intentionally. But I will say that the place where I would agree with them is that, like, creating more gun laws isn't really the answer. I mean, I think that it's really important to go ahead and start addressing issues like toxic masculinity, white male entitlement, and things like that. I mean, the things that actually cause people to, you know, really feel entitled and think that it's okay to, like, kill a bunch of their, like, classmates and a bunch of people. Mm-hmm. But I also don't think that, like, guns are the real problem. I just remember, like, what was it, about a month ago, where that incel up in Canada got a van and he just drove over 19 or 20 people. Like, I mean, it can be a gun. I mean, it can be a van. I mean, you can use almost anything that around to go ahead and be a tool of violence. So I think that the focus on guns is a real mistake.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that the counter-recruitment work and the that you all have done, you know, I'm speaking broadly of the Redneck Revolt Network, has been, you know, really inspiring. I'm just kind of curious for other people that are listening to this that are wanting to kind of like intervene in the gun culture. What other ideas would you put out there for people to replicate?
I would first say, you know, like, if you can join your local Redneck Revolt or John Brown Gun Club chapter. Mm-hmm. That'd be the first thing. If there isn't one, go ahead and reach out to the organization nationally to go ahead and try to form one. I think that the work that we do has a really, really specific focus, which is really important. Because if we're not talking to the militia people, then Nazis are talking to them. Mm-hmm. And it's really important for us to be able to have those conversations within gun culture in general. To really kind of like try to help reframe the conversation too. I mean, it isn't, you know, it's with every intention that we try to frame things as like, you know, like we are trying to arm ourselves against the violence of white supremacy, that we point out the racist history of gun control, that we try to reframe these conversations in that light. I mean, I have no illusions that in the event that there were more strict gun laws passed, that the first people that would be prosecuted would be people of color in marginalized communities. I have no doubt in my mind that that would be the case. And I think that it's really important to put things on that platter and really frame things in that way so that people understand it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just wanted to turn now back to Parkland. You know, there was obviously the March for Our Lives and, you know, the various school walkouts seems to kind of have died down. And, you know, we've critiqued, broadly speaking, the ties to the Democratic Party that quote, you know, movement had. But I'm just curious now that it seems like the moment has sort of died down. I mean, obviously, unfortunately, tragically, there's still school shootings that seem to happen very regularly. But I'm just curious, looking back now, do you have any other thoughts on March for Our Lives or this kind of like push for gun control that like came out of that shooting?
I would say that the movement seems to have kind of waned a little bit, largely because, I mean, it had the illusion of being a grassroots movement, but a lot of it was very, very astroturfed.
Right.
And a lot of the funding came from different anti-gun groups, came from, I believe, one of Mayor Bloomberg's organizations to really try to go ahead and really organize what appeared to be a mass movement. But again, one of the things is that, I mean, you don't see the real sustainability of that. I mean, they got a lot of media. They had one really, really big action. And after that, it just seemed to kind of go nowhere. Mm-hmm. Being refocused on, like, you know, let's pass more laws. Let's have legislators try to fix this problem.
Well, let's, I mean, get the Democrats elected.
Exactly. I mean, it's really trying to kind of push that whole narrative, which, I mean, honestly, it's like, I don't think that's going to fix the problem. I mean, okay, so you ban 30-round magazines and it's 10-round magazines instead. So you're going to have 10 dead kids instead of 30 dead kids. I mean, as if that's a victory. I mean, that, in my mind, that is not a victory. I mean, that's still the loss of 10 innocent lives.
Right.
I think it's really important to go ahead and really like dive into like what the root issues here are, which again, I cannot stress enough are, you know, toxic masculinity and, you know, white male entitlement.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those are the things that are driving these shootings. I mean, I don't really see a lot of, you know, like queer women or people of color engaging in this level of violence and taking up arms, yeah, and shooting people in their classes. I don't see it. And I think that having an AstroTurf movement that really focuses on let's ban something is not going to accomplish the goal it sets out to really do. And honestly, I mean, why do we want the only people to have guns to be cops and in the military? That's really terrifying to me.
Yeah.
Wow. Why would we take away our right to our ability to really defend ourselves?
Yeah. Or the fact that these shooters can like wear MAGA hats and etch swastikas into their guns and no one seems to question that at all.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, you know, looking towards the future, what excites you? You know, what does the path ahead look like for this type of organizing? I think this is just really, really interesting and really incredible work that you all are doing. You know, if you kind of look to the future, what does it look like? What are the goals that you all see in front of you?
We do a lot of events that are really security focused. I mean, mm-hmm, when there are some marches that happen, we actually have groups that range from on the left end of liberal to, you know, far leftists that should reach out to us to actually engage and do security work for them. So I think that is one of the directions that we're really getting. We're also doing a lot more firearms familiarity training. We have goals of setting up more speaking panels to really engage people more. And we still really have our ongoing, you know, concealed carry license scholarship, which we really want people to kind of take advantage of that resource that we provide for everyone.
Awesome. Well, anything else you want to talk about that we didn't hit on? How can people get a hold of you if they want to find out more about what your chapter is doing or if they're in the area?
So you can, if you're in the Puget Sound area, we have members and actions across 7 or 8 different counties at this point in the Puget Sound area. You can reach, if you're not in the area and want to get more involved nationally, you can reach out to redneckrevolt.org. There's contacts there. Locally, you can also reach out to us via email at PugetSound@redneckrevolt.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Puget Sound John Gun Club, or Puget Sound JBGC. Or if you are not local, you can reach out to the national organization, redneckrevolt.org, and find a chapter that you can connect with locally or make your own.
This has been the It's Going Down podcast. Check itsgoingdown.org for daily updates, columns, action reports, and news. Go to itsgoingdown.org/shop to support us and follow us on all social media platforms. IGD, your daily resource for insurgent proletarian life.